Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. Sunday edition. Yeah, well, extra bonus video. So, Bro's always made a video. I won't bother even playing it. It's the same experiment he's done like 5 times now. Okay. And, yes, he's getting consistent results, but they still theoretically can't be explained. So nobody could theoretically explain how the results could possibly fit in the real universe without, in fact, creating free energy and exploitable free energy. So, you know, it doesn't make much sense. And it goes back to an original experiment he did with shooting objects, half mass and a full mass, and then just collecting the energy with another spring. And the idea is that, yes, you collect exactly the same that you shot it with. So the same compression you shoot it with is the same you're going to collect it with. But anyway, all right, so it just has to do with this simple idea of you launch a one mass and you launch a two mass. Now, in this case, they're close to the same size, I guess. I can't say for sure. And he's using a rubber band to launch them. And the idea is they travel through the air, okay, and they land at a spot. All right, now the logic tells you, okay, that the half mass would have twice the velocity of the two mass. I even have that in my drawing where I have the V, 2V. Okay, the velocity is twice as high for this one. You're using the same energy to push them. The assumption is this one has half the velocity, twice the velocity. Now, it turns out it must not, okay? Because let's just say that we did do the experiment and we measured the velocity. So he doesn't measure the velocity in his experiments, except the one where he did where he lies and says that he debunked something when he got the, you know, he got the 14 answer and his guess was 16 and my guess was 12 and he got 14. And he called that a winning proof. He said he proved his 16 theory by getting 14. Yeah, that's called lying. Yeah. But anyway, so if this was going twice the velocity, you'd understand that there's really no way it could do anything but land twice as far. It really can't do anything else. I mean, there's no possibility in the real universe that you could change this scenario because these land at exactly the same time. So the pressure down is exactly the same for both of them. At a certain location, they will have fallen exactly the same amount. All right. And so you can't change anything about the rate at which they fall. And the falling rate, as every physicist will tell you, the rate at which they fall has nothing to do with this velocity. So their velocity this way is completely unchanged by the movement this way. So like a spaceship, you can have a velocity and then you can push the spaceship sideways. Okay, you can make it move sideways. You can't make it move in this direction. You can just give it another velocity in another direction. And that's what happens here. So there's absolutely no way, like if you did a frame by frame, that is you take a strobe light and you take a picture of where the objects are, there's no way that the 2V could come up short. That is only come up here at 1.4. Okay, there's no possibility that it could land here. If it was twice the velocity here, it has to end up here. It can't possibly end up here. So we know that whatever's happening in Brozo's experiment has nothing to do with comparing two objects, one going twice as fast. It's not going twice as fast. So the real question is, are rubber bands conservative? That is, so if he's using a rubber band to launch the objects, how is it possible that it's not providing the same momentum? So somehow the lighter object is getting, you know, 0.4, okay, 1.4 instead of the full 2 velocity. So somehow it's not getting the full portion of its momentum. You know, 40% of the momentum is not getting into the object somehow. So where's it going? So that would be one question. Just pushing hair. So somehow the lighter one, you could say, well, somehow the lighter one, it's easier to cause a bounce. And so it bounces and then it goes a little bit. And so the rubber band doesn't stay in contact. Now that would be my argument, that you have to have good contact with the object when you're pushing it. And so lighter objects are more likely to bounce off the thing you're hitting them with. And so, and if they bounce off, that means they're not, for this distance, they're not getting pushed. So the spring would be expanding, but it wouldn't be pushing because the object's already going faster than the spring is moving. And so therefore, it's running away from the pusher. So you can't push air. You know, it's not doing any good. And you only have a certain length of time to push with. So that's why less energy gets into the lighter object, is because there's a flaw in the launch. Now, it seems clear that in every case, though, so he's done at least four different experiments. And in each one, one with an air track, one with Skittles, little Skittly things, some other one, and this one. So at least four experiments. And in every single experiment, apparently this is happening, that somehow the launch device isn't, so even though one of the launch devices was a spring, a compressed spring, or a rubber band, it doesn't matter which one he uses, he always gets 1.4 instead of twice the velocity for the half mass. So somehow the half mass only gets 1.4 in every single one of his experiments. Okay, the same thing happens. Now, obviously that breaks conservation of momentum. But the argument is, well, it's not really broken. It's just because somehow lighter things are harder to give the full measure of the energy to, because they jitter too much. They move. They bounce around too much. And so you don't push them properly. So you don't get the energy into them. So that's why they always end up falling short. And it's way short. Understand, 1.4 is, you know, 0.6 lost. It's missing 0.6 out of 2, okay? So it's missing a lot of energy. It's 1/3 of the energy is missing. Yeah, that's a lot of missing energy. All right, so I'll redraw and go through why this just creates a paradox that he won't argue any of the theory. So there's not much to argue with, because he won't argue any of these kind of details. So I think it can be said, I think everyone really has to agree that there's no way, if it's going twice the velocity, it doesn't land twice as far. It has to. There's just no choice, because in this space, there isn't enough time for the velocities to get changed by air resistance or even friction. Even friction wouldn't destroy this idea of having two race cars. And you give one half the velocity, you know, in 10 inches, one of them's going to go 5 inches and one of them will go 10 inches. You know, it's always going to be 50-50 in the sense it's all, one of them's always going to be twice as far ahead, because it's going twice as fast. And it won't be until you get all the way to the point where they start losing a lot of energy that you'll find any differential from that 50-50. So, you know, those facts are hard to overcome, in my opinion. You really can't. There's no way that it would be possible for twice the velocity to land 1.4. So we know it's his launcher. We know it's at the launching point that the velocities get messed up. Now, I've argued that the simple solution is to use a lever to launch them, because that guarantees that you're going to get twice the velocity out here. So if you put them on a lever and shoot them at the same time, there's no way you won't get 2x the velocity. And again, if you get twice the velocity, I think it's pretty much guaranteed you're going to get twice the distance. Okay, no way to evade that. No way to screw that up. So it's really just an argument about what happens, whether you can have variable momentum, whether a rubber band or a spring can create variable momentum. It's possible that somehow it doesn't store a consistent amount of momentum. And again, the implications of his theory is essentially the same as the lever argument, in the sense that it just leads to the creation of a free energy device, because all I need to do is put a heavier object on the rubber band, and I'm guaranteed to get more energy. Probably have to wait for this to dry. All right, so let's go through the free energy implications. So you have a definite compression of the rubber band. It's the same compression. And in one case, it creates a momentum, say, of 100. And in the other case, it only creates a momentum of, we can just make it 140. Okay. So you have this difference. That's probably the wrong way to say it, right? Now I have to think about it. It's supposed to be the same momentum, and your the output isn't the same. So it's the same kinetic energy, but it's not the same momentum. So that's the key point. So they come out with the same joules of energy by kinetic energy theory. The lighter one-half object, the one-half, okay, the mass, is going 1.4 the velocity of the full one, which means they'll have the same joules. But in terms of momentum, they're not the same. So one of them gets more momentum. The heavier one gets more momentum. And I think that's not the right number. I think it has to be 60. But anyway, it's a different momentum. All right, so the point would be, though, is it's a standard amount of compression. So the idea would be is you could take the lighter object and you could shoot it into another rubber band, right? And the idea would be is that, oh yeah, it'll compress exactly the same amount of energy. So I'll only lose a tiny percentage, maybe 5%. It's not tiny, but so I'll lose 5% of the energy by shooting it right into another rubber band, right? And it would go back and forth. And so the idea would be is that this compression, if I locked it here, I've only put in a small amount of momentum. So I have the lesser amount of momentum I put in. So it only took 100 joules to move this back and to launch the object. And yet now I could take that same compression and just put the heavy object in it, and I'll increase how much momentum I'm going to get out. So now when I launch it back, when I let this one go, I'll get the 160. So I've gone from just having 100 momentums in to getting 160 momentums out. And obviously that creates a free energy situation, because I could just keep redoing it over and over again and just keep increasing my amount of momentum. So I could make a perpetual motion machine, or I could make a free energy machine by just using the small object to create the energy that I'm going to launch a heavy object with. So I could also just put this on a lever, right? I could just put a lever here, and instead of 2 times the distance, right, here's the fulcrum. Instead of going 2 times the distance, I just go to 1.4 the distance, and I shoot this object right into the lever at 1.4. So it's 1.4 further away than this 2 mass here. So I put the 2 mass on the lever here. And then I push this energy into here, the 1.4 that this velocity represents with the half mass. And theoretically, this will leave, okay, with more momentum. So it just doesn't make any sense. You can't make it make sense. It can't make sense in this physical universe because it creates free energy. So our obvious argument is, even though you've done it 4 times with different springs and different rubber bands, you're still doing something wrong because you're not getting the energy in. Now, I did the experiment, a version of it, where I just shot 2 ball bearings in one, and they, you know, with the same energy. And the fact was, I didn't get a perfect result. I mean, the fact is, it didn't come out exactly half, but it came out the other extreme. Instead of 1.4, it came out 1.8. Okay, so yeah, all right, it's still off. It's still not perfect. Somehow the slower one didn't get, the faster object didn't get up to 2x. Didn't reach as far as it was supposed to. But again, it's the difference between, you know, this this result. I mean, you're looking for this result. You get this result, or you get this. This is my result. Okay, so at least mine's closer to the expectation. But this is way off in the sense of it's a gigantic degrade in the expectation. So this goes back to all these arguments about people who say you can't throw an 8-pound bowling ball twice as fast as you can throw a 16-pound ball. Sometimes you can only go 0.4 faster. You know, and so this 0.4, this 1.4, isn't argued by any physics professor. So they still can't show me a single link to a single physics professor teaching the 1.4 theory. And there's lots of examples, you know, where they, you know, they have a little cart and it shoots a ball up in the air, and then the cart travels a distance and it catches the ball. You know, there's lots of examples that demonstrate that the expectation is correct regarding distance you would travel based on velocity. And the launching device is the key point. I mean, there's not a whole lot of great experimental data on different ways of launching objects and the frailty of that method, you know, whether or not light things actually go twice as fast, even like a cork gun, or lots of examples where maybe the lighter object bounces around inside more. You could even argue this happens in guns, you know, and that's why they started rifling the gun, was to make sure that the bullet didn't bounce around as much, and different things to prevent the loss of energy. So it might be just something histemic. Like I said, I didn't get perfect results either, indicating it's not as simple as, because, you know, when you put two ball bearings behind a rubber band, the two of them have to stay in contact. All the energy has to get into both of them. If one of them bounces off the other one, not all the energy will get in. There's lots of reasons to see why the heavier one would screw up. But there's also reasons why the lighter one might, because the rubber band will stick more. Lots of reasons to understand that maybe there's a mechanism why the faster motion is the more difficult motion. So I guess that would be the takeaway point, is that imposing a higher velocity is more difficult than imposing a slower velocity. The faster you bang into something, the more likely it's to crack or to splinter or for other things to happen that screws up the transfer. And the slower the energy, the more reliable it is in terms of its capacity to be transferred. And maybe that's just a byproduct of this experiment, is the faster you're trying to push something, the more potential for waste there is, where the energy goes in the wrong direction. For example, when you're pushing it fast, maybe the ball bearing lifts up a little bit off of the rubber band. So you have a rubber band pushing, and you kind of have to know, if you're not on the center of the gravity, that if you're pushing below the center of its gravity, you might end up pushing it up. Yeah. And that's going to hurt its distance this way. So any energy that gets converted into any motion in any other direction will hurt how fast it goes in the direction you're trying to push it. So it could be understood that the faster you try to push it, the more it moves around, and the more it moves in directions that aren't the direction you're looking for. Now, you can make arguments that the exact opposite happens when you're going through something. So when you shoot something into clay, for example, the faster you go, the less likely you are to push in the wrong direction. And the more likely it is you're pushing the energy forward and cleaning the path for yourself, because you're pushing stuff forward as fast as you're going, and that stuff pushing forward ends up plowing the snow before you get to the snow, so to speak. All right. So, but that's the real physics. The real physics is there's an answer to the question, and the answer can't be paradoxical. The answer can't be either free kinetic energy or free momentum. So anytime you're creating either one of those, there's a problem. I'd say it's okay to create free kinetic energy, but it's just like Richard Feynman said. So these are Richard Feynman's words. So Stephen Breaux takes no account for what Richard Feynman actually says. So I think the exact phrase is, you can finagle kinetic energy. Nature can finagle kinetic energy, but nature can't finagle momentum. So he's making a clear statement about how you have to conserve momentum. So if your device has a certain amount of momentum stored in it, it has to produce it. And if it doesn't produce it, that is, if your little ball bearing only goes 1.4, then something happened where you didn't get the momentum. Clearly, because you have to explain that. You can't destroy the momentum. And clearly, if you recognize that once you create free momentum, you create free energy, and then you can make a perpetual motion device. And obviously those devices don't exist, and they'll never exist, and Brozo isn't going to be able to invent one, so this 1.4 theory will not be found to be accurate. The fall will be in the method. So change the method, and you'll change the outcome. All right. That's probably enough of a video. I mean, we've already been over this, and over this. I think the lever argument is even stronger in proving the point. So he still wants to argue a point I made over a year ago, and that is completely dependent on my premise argument, which is the half mass has to be going twice as fast. If the half mass isn't going twice as fast, obviously there's not going to be a 2-to-1 relationship in the distance it travels. If it only has 1.4 of the velocity, it's not going to go twice as far. All right, so I think that's about it. So we'll leave it there and see where the argument evolves. But clearly, my condition on the experiment is getting twice the velocity. If you're not getting twice the velocity, then of course the thing can't go twice as fast. Yeah, of course it can't. And it won't have the same momentum, obviously. It won't have the same energy. So, okey-doke. So this has been the DraftPhysics.com video presentation. Till the next time and such. So forth and what.